I'm going to give you the instructions for this test. I'll introduce each part of the test and give you time to look at the questions. At the start of each piece, you will hear this sound. Remember to play each piece twice. Now open your question paper and look at part one. You'll hear three different extracts. For questions 1 to 6, choose the answer A, B or C, which fits best according to what you hear. There are two questions for each extract. Part one. You hear two students talking about shopping for clothes. Now look at questions 1 and 2.
Recently, a whole pile of my clothes got chucked out after a flatmate mistook them for rubbish. I was so upset.
Oh, no.
Well, don't get me wrong. It wasn't that they held any particular significance for me or had any great value. It was the prospect of shopping for new stuff I couldn't face.
Tell me about it. Even if there's, like, something I need to get, my trick is to put it off to the last possible moment, so I'll have less chance to waste time on such a pointless activity. Maybe that's why people think our clothes are rubbish.
Yeah, but what gets me is that I reckon for a lot of people, the clothes aren't the point. It's more about the act of shopping. It's heavily linked to wanting to be the centre of attention, to clothes giving them a strong personal identity or whatever. It's basically a way of showing off. Too much importance is placed on clothes and appearance, but it's not like a political issue for me. It's just a game I'm not prepared to play.
Now play the recording again.
Extract 2.
You hear part of an interview with a musician called Max. Now look at questions 3 and 4.
So was music in the blood, Max?
Do you mean, did my mum play the piano? Hardly. But I was well into the charts as a boy. In all honesty, I didn't think that being number one was something completely unattainable. I had a cockiness, but I kept it hidden from my peers. I'd hear a hit record and think, I could do that. From the age of 14, I fired off loads of demo discs I made in my bedroom. I had a folder where I kept all the rejection letters I got from record labels. It might have helped to share that with somebody, but I didn't. I just sulked, then had another go.
Then when you did get a contract?
I was vindicated. And it was a good deal in most respects, too. Funny thing was, though, if after my first hit I thought I'd made it, I was soon disabused of that notion. If I was to add up everything I'd done up till that point, school, working in a factory, learning the guitar, making the demos, it doesn't compare. I've had to put in a lot of effort to capitalise on that breakthrough, I can tell you.
Now play the recording again.
Extract 3.
You hear part of a discussion programme in which two dancers are talking about their careers. Now look at questions 5 and 6.
It's really interesting because I didn't dance when I was in Hong Kong. I didn't pick up dance till I went to high school in the US, and that was probably like when I was 16 years old. Again, I didn't do it consciously. It wasn't like something that I was waiting to do. One time I danced in a culture show, and the dance director at my school, she asked, "Are you interested in really training? Like, you seem to have talent." And at that point, I was really not interested. I was an athlete, a three-season athlete. I was more interested in, like, hanging with the guys and doing what I was used to. But when I saw her perform, I was blown away and decided it was for me. And at college, I majored in it. I trained classically.
That's so unlike my experience. I mean, I was dancing almost before I could walk. And although I wouldn't say I was pressurized into it, my parents were, like, behind me every step of the way. So much so that I was on the point of rebellion on more than one occasion. Though I'm happy to say that particular storm never actually broke.
Now play the recording again. That is the end of part one. Now turn to part two.